Peace and love, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about true people's liberation movements and revolution. I'm your host, Raven. I use she, her pronouns. And I want to say, first of all, assalamu alaikum to all my brothers and sisters out here. I also want to say peace and love to everybody who's willing to fight for it. I also want to say free the land, free all political prisoners, free all the freedom fighters, all the oppressed people, all the young folks, all the queer folks, all the land defenders and water protectors who are out here doing the work of the masses, who are out here fighting for the masses, who are out here educating and participating in actions with the masses, and those who are doing so in spirit as their bodies are locked behind walls and bars while their minds, their words, and their spirits live on far beyond the reaches of these prisoner of war camps and concentration camps. I want to say thank you to all you who are tuning in, who have tuned in before. I want to say also thank you to all of those who have continued to support me in ways that are, you know, less seen, more felt. And thank you also to the comrades, friends, and people who I have around me who continue to push me forward, who continue to hold me accountable, who continue to want better for me and for themselves, as well as for others. Today I want to talk to you about something which I've hesitated in a way to talk about, post about, because I don't really feel it's my place. You know, I come on here and I talk about things which are pointed out to me, which I learn from others. And so I've been trying to set the pride and the ego aside to post less and do more. And so you probably have noticed, you've seen less of me on social media, you've seen less of me in the podcast arena, simply because I believe that at this moment it is incredibly illogical to think that now is the time to be committing to individualistic, one-sided, theoretical, abstract discussions and discourse without applying real experimentation and practice and reflecting on the lessons which we are learning right in front of us. So today I want to talk about the importance of heightening the struggle, heightening the contradictions, and internationalizing the fight. So introducing this discussion, I want to point out that first of all, history is not linear. What I mean by this is that when it comes to the struggle against imperialism, colonialism, class divisions, and exploitation, it's often very difficult to feel like we are on a winning course because we face so many incredible setbacks, so many contradictions, so many difficulties in our own capacity, the capacity of others. And of course, because of indoctrination and propaganda, many of us either compromise and normalize and claim easy victories, which are not truly victories, and adhere to a reformist conciliatory approach. And then there are those who have committed to a revolutionary approach, to an approach which intends to go to the core of the problems which are facing society and look at the fact that there is a minuscule minority, a almost insignificant amount of people, if they weren't so wealthy, who control and dominate everything, from the corporations to the healthcare. Well, really, the corporations are everything. You know, they control the banks, they control the corporations, and the corporations control the news industries, the healthcare industry, transportation, education, labor, the economy, the political system. All of these things are dictated and dominated not by morality, by justice, by checks and balances, but rather by what benefits those who are the most wealthy, those who are in control and in positions of political power, whether elected, you know, representatives, or more so to the point, those that the elected representatives are truly under the thumb of, those who pay them, those who set their policies, those who decide when, where, how, and what they will say. This is ultimately the group which is making it so that the masses of people around the world are incapable of advancing to a level which would actually conclusively destroy the forms of oppression and suffering and exploitation which we all face today. So what I mean by history is not linear is that this fight has been going on for thousands of years. And when we look at it from bird's eye view, we can see how over time, the quantity of struggles, right, has led to the shift in the quality of these struggles. But it hasn't necessarily happened back to back to back, without pushback, without setback, without failures, without mistakes, without counter-revolutions, periods of dictatorship, fascism. All of this is a part of the what we call dialectical process of development, meaning the relation of opposites and the contradictory nature of development and the forces which are at play, and how in their struggle against one another, eventually a path forward is crafted, not by one side or the other, but by really the fight and struggle between the two, and the accomplishment, the success, the winning of one side over the other. The second point I want to introduce is that struggle in Palestine. The struggle in Palestine is a part of an international battle against colonialism and imperialism. The division and borders which we have between peoples and lands and nations, these are man-made. These are creations of colonialism, right? Of course, we know peoples have deferred and differentiated themselves in many different ways. However, in many cases, those divisions were not always antagonistic, unless made so by a certain class or group among the people, which was intending to exploit the rest. The third point is that the attacks on the students, professors, unions, journalists, and organizations are a part of a strategic pushback and propaganda attempt led by the international ruling class to prevent the masses of people around the world from really getting behind this struggle, not only for the liberation of Palestine, but for the liberation of all the oppressed classes, all the oppressed people around the world. And the last point that I want to bring up in this introduction is the necessity for reflection, not only on the past six months and what has been effective, but also on the decades before this, what hasn't worked, what has, by whose standards, are we claiming easy victories, are we genuinely resolving problems, etc. So, opening up the history book and looking into struggles of the past, we are seeing the growth of student encampments here in the West. We know that there is a history of such actions, occupation, right? Occupy Wall Street, this was an action which took place back in 2010, 2011, I want to say. And of course, it's not the first of its kind. Things like sit-ins, lock-ins, work stoppages, disruptions, all kinds of things like this. Occupation of land, right? The occupation of Alcatraz, the occupation of Wounded Knee, the occupation of land in the South by Africans, the struggle for indigenous land throughout the world. There have been attempts by people also, like, for example, the landless workers movement, the MST in Brazil. You have different movements throughout Central and South America, throughout Africa and Asia, where occupation of land, the tending of that land, the building of homes on that land has been a liberation effort. And then, of course, we know there are efforts such as the Jewish occupation of Palestine, which are of a colonial nature. Now, the reason why I point this out is because when we commit to certain tactics, right, we have to understand that those tactics have a history, and that if we are not aware of that history, that our enemies are, we should always assume that. And we should also understand and assume that because of this, that they will have the best equipment, the best training, the best tactics prepared in order to dispel that occupation. And so when you have folks who are actually putting their bodies on the line, it's very nerve-wracking because, of course, many of them are facing various different forms of harm, and we don't want folks in that position to be doing that without consciousness of these realities. But the fact of the matter is, and I know I've said a lot of shit about these different movements and groups amongst the movement, it is clear that many among the student movement are not ignorant. Many of them are coming from maybe what we might call petty bourgeois backgrounds, but many of them are also coming with an education of revolutionary theory. A lot of them are coming from other places in the world where revolutions have happened. A lot of them are coming from families, backgrounds, neighborhoods, and communities which have either been a part of revolutionary organizations, movements, social struggles, religious groups which have fought for the betterment of the poor, the needy, the oppressed. And so, of course, we know, historically speaking, not only is this important to point out that it's not new so that we can look at the tactics which have worked or not worked in the past, but also to understand that because it's not new, we should not commit to the same character or the same level of struggle if we're going to engage in that tactic, but heighten that level of struggle. An example might be, hold on, let me take a sip of this coffee here. An example might be voting rights, okay? So I owe this to Daruba Ben-Wahad, who pointed this out, but in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Africans in the United States, in occupied Turtle Island, were fighting for, generally, freedom, liberty, and justice, right? Now, amongst this broad description that I'm giving it, that you know, I'm creating this label here. There were multiple different, we could say, either factions or groups or tactics which were common among this movement. There was those more committed to reformism, to voting rights, to assimilation, and things like that. There were those who were committed to separatism or forming their own nation state, occupying land which they had been brought to. And then there were those who sought to leave the United States and other places they were brought in order to go back to Africa. We can think of the Garvey movement and many others, right? But again, amongst all three of these groups, we had generally the want for liberation. Some defined it differently than others. Freedom, justice, and equality, right? Well, when taking up these tactics, right, and choosing certain strategies, each one of these words becomes defined differently, depending on which kind of tactics, which kind of political ideology you're working with. So today, right, after through the 40s, 50s, and 60s, there were armed struggles, there were voting rights struggles, right? There was attempt to occupy land, set up new governments, new nation states, and attempts to go back to Africa. Eventually, the so-called success we are told in history class that was achieved was the Civil Rights Act. And if you know your history, you know that the Civil Rights Act was a complete and utter empty shell of previous legislation which was attempted to be passed and stopped, which would have practically created or attempted to develop institutions that ensured equality, accountability, and representation. Whereas the Civil Rights Act, what Africans in Turtle Island really got was just, some of them, the right to vote. But of course, we know immediately after the 1965 Civil Rights Act was passed, 65, 64, 66? Oh gosh. Mid-60s. Civil Rights Act was passed. Civil Rights Bill. We know that in many of the states where voting was not allowed, aka the majority of them, there were intimidation tactics, poll taxes, IQ tests, and all kinds of things set up to actually prevent the implementation of this act in practical ways. We have seen since then more and more that voting rights have been pulled back on, that certain obstacles have been put in place of certain groups, especially Black, Brown, Indigenous people, disabled folks, immigrants, and done so in order to make sure that not only can they not vote, right, but that they don't really have any means of political participation at all, right? Because voting's really all we got here. Unless you got the money to run in an election and hopefully win, or become a police officer, or own land, you don't have political power in the United States. And that goes for all capitalist nations. So today, when you have people who are coming out and demanding that we fight for a new Civil Rights Act, right? If we're going to struggle around the question of voting, around the question of representation, around the question of equality and political participation, then we can't take the same line, the same approach, the same tactic, which failed 60 years ago. But in fact, have to heighten the struggle and understand that without real power, without real control over land, resources, political institutions, etc., that there is no such thing as representation and there is no such thing as equality. Because we live in a dictatorship of capital. So we have to eliminate that dictatorship in order to ensure any kind of equality can be had for anyone, except for the rich and powerful. When we look at history, a lot of us can say like, oh, yo, like, how come people didn't do this? How come people didn't do that? How come this didn't work? How come folks didn't get around this struggle? Because when you look into history, conditions and realities are so clear in hindsight, right? But yet, at the same time, while we criticize those generations which came before us for not doing enough, for being complacent, for being normalizing, for being compromising, we are doing the same exact thing that they did, which is focusing in the past or looking into the future instead of focusing on the now. In order to understand the past or the future, you have to firmly plant your feet in the now and vice versa, meaning that when we look at the history and we say the conditions were so bad, how did they not have a revolution? We're ignoring many different factors which are still active today. For example, why haven't we had revolutions across the entire world, considering how bad climate change is, considering how bad human trafficking and forced cheap labor, because that's what we want to call this process known as immigration. Because realistically, what it is the new form, one of the new forms of slavery, along with incarceration. When we look at poverty and hunger, or the genocide happening in Gaza, why, you know, we say and get so frustrated, why aren't people doing anything? Why are people so confused? Why is the world not on its head right now? And in a way, it is. Sometimes it's not as strongly felt. Other times it can be. But the reality is, conditions alone don't make revolution. What makes revolution and revolutionary change is first and foremost the masses. Unless the people get behind and support revolutionary objectives and put their lives and time and energy on the line in order to ensure this possibility, then no group, no matter how well-armed, no matter how well-trained, no matter how well-funded, even the ruling class will not be able to stay in power. Because over time, the people, or the former ruling class, or some other group which wants to seize power, is going to be able to slide in and do so because we don't have the support of the people, or the ruling class doesn't have the support of the people. We have to have the support of the people. And what the habits of millions and the changing, you know, through revolution of the world by the masses themselves really looks like is not, as we've talked about before, you know, a group of us going, hey guys, you know, you should do this, you should read this book, you should go over here and watch this video, blah, 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 blah. It's going in and doing this social investigation, asking people, what are you facing?
You know, what are you up against? You know, figuring out where their heads are at, what their minds are on, where their hearts are focused, right? Understand their background, understand their history, understand their struggles, understand their mindset, and understand their conditions, right? And then upon doing so, reflect on that in order to try to develop whether it be a program, a list of objectives, some kind of platform or ideas, in order to try to encourage and support people in their struggle for their own liberation, right? We're not trying to fight for nobody. We're not trying to say that we need to fight for anybody. We're not trying to say that anybody's dumb enough that they can't figure this shit out by themselves. But oftentimes, the reality is it either people don't have the time, the experience, the relationships, or the understanding in order to put what they're facing into, through reflection, a genuine set of acts or objectives or projects in order to change that. When we look at history as well, we see that not only just the occupation of, like, land, but things like protest, demonstration, awareness building, tenant unions, all of these things, again, are very common. So if you look at the history of the union movement, labor movement, right, there's some positive historical points. There was once a strike in the United States of nearly 950,000 people right before the National Labor Relations Board was put into place. However, there are also very real contradictions among the labor movement, right? So you have a lot of people today who are telling people, go out, form a union, join a union. Well, that's a wonderful idea, and that's, yes, very important. But again, how are we doing that? At what level are we engaging these unions? How are we involving ourselves in them? Are we, you know, let me give you an example for this one, right? I worked for a job here locally where we had a union. And that union came to talk to us in the time that I was there, about a year, twice. They sent one representative who gave us basically no information, who answered very few of our questions, right? Didn't give us a real legitimate platform, wouldn't encourage us to go picket, wouldn't encourage us to talk to the news, wouldn't encourage us to do anything. And in fact, this union leader was a former police officer. So much of the union ideology and much of the union messaging was actually pro-America, pro-capitalism. They were actually pro-war when the conflict, the military operation in Ukraine began. So there were those among my coworkers who were stewards for this union, right? And some of them told me that, hey, you know, I'm just trying to do what I can to try to make things a little bit better, right? But when is it okay or enough to file in line and follow suit? And when is it necessary to go against the grain, to heighten the contradictions, to point out false leadership, misunderstanding, hypocrisy, opportunism, right? What is the point where we are going to allow, or excuse me, let me say that again. What is the point where we are going to no longer allow these leaders of these so-called political parties, of these so-called socialist formations, of these reactionary unions? How long will we continue to allow them to call themselves the leadership, to call the shots, to be in the front lines? How long will it take us for us to put ourselves or for others to get there if we keep just following in line, right? If you want to join a union, go for it. If you want to join an organization, go for it. But don't do it blindly. Don't be stupid. Don't think that just because so-and-so calls themselves this, just because this formation says they're about that, that it means that that's what they're really actually about. Look into their history, read their principles, their mission statement, their objectives, and compare it in real time to the practices, behaviors, accountability, or lack thereof, which that organization or person displays to you. Don't be played. Don't let yourself be played, right? We're not here to be allies. We're not here to follow orders. We're not here to play the background singers. We, the people, the masses of people, what, no matter who they be, if they are conscious, willing, able to make sacrifice, willing to come to conclusive answers based on material analysis, and to throw away their ego and pride and their individualism, then they deserve a seat at the table leading that struggle. Whether they've been doing this for a year or 50 years. Some of these elders, some of these leaders out here genuinely are holding the people back. I don't care where they come from. I don't care what trajectory they were on. I don't care if they were a Panther. I don't care if they were a Young Lord. I don't care if they were an AIM member. We know from all of those groups, you have many, many, many opportunists, real revolutionaries, compromisers, and fighters, right? Not one group just because you joined it or were a part of it doesn't mean that your shit doesn't stink. Let's put it like that, right? So this shit, right, these protests, these demonstrations, this awareness building, right, it's not enough. Not how we're doing it now. And it's changing. So I'm not going to come out here and say, like, I'm speaking with authority. I am sharing reflections that not only the resistance throughout the world is sharing, but that many of the students, many of the, you know, young union members, many of the young folks getting into the political organizations are saying, are feeling, are sharing on social media. This is their points, not mine. And in this light, right, in this moment, we are seeing that because of the lack of a spine, the lack of a backbone, the lack of real revolutionary objectives and actions being committed to, and the failures of those movements which came before us, as well as the testament to the strength of imperialism at a certain stage, right? We see that fascism has been able to build its base once again among the masses of people of the world. Now, we know that as far back as the 20s and 30s, the same things about fascism have not always been true. Certain things look different. Certain messaging is a little askewed. Imagery, the way they approach certain problems is not 100% the same going all the way back to the 1920s Italian fascism to today. But what is true is that there are certain characteristics, certain principles, which remain the same across time and space, which build or are built on in order to create certain forms, certain tendencies, certain trajectories of fascism and far-right politics, right? The attempt by many in the social democratic movement, the left kind of adjacent movements and organizations, to commit to this idea of international law, to commit to this idea of morality, to commit to this notion of democracy being possible under capitalism, the attempts to reform and legislate in change to a system which is built specifically not to allow for change. except for change, which enhances its ability to exploit and enrich itself. Because of this, fascism has been able to build a genuinely developing and growing base among some sections of the people. We cannot say that fascism has ever or will ever be an ideology of the people, or an ideology which has a genuine mass base. But fascism is not only just an ideology, but a tool of force, right? So let's get into this. As cop cities are expanding across the United States, as student activists are being kicked out of schools, as young water defenders and land protectors are being thrown in jail, as young women who are being forced to try to seek out an abortion or who lose a child due to a miscarriage are being put in jail, as human trafficking victims, aka immigrants, are being brought into detention centers and being forced into laboring or sexual and human trafficking of other kind. While all of this is happening, right, the liberals are out in front of us telling us that we have to abide by the United Nations as the mechanism and method by which these things are resolved. We have to look to the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice. We have to look to the imperialist and colonialist created systems and institutions for our liberation. Let me tell you this. No ceasefire resolution will be enough. No United Nations Charter, no International Court of Justice ruling will be enough to actually stop a system which is built by force. You cannot stop a force that is in motion without a force which is equal or greater to that opposing force. This is true not only just in physics, but in political struggle. If we are looking at the fact that right now, the colonial entity in occupied Palestine, willing and able to commit mass genocide on live television, bombing schools, hospitals, recreational centers, parks, walkways, people fleeing from the war on the walkways that they're told to be on, as they are finding and unearthing mass graves, right? People are telling you to vote or not to vote as a genuine solution. People are telling you to, you know, call your legislator, right? This is not enough. This is not enough. Because the reality is, when one group of people is in power, has guns, has control over the state apparatus, meaning the news, the police, the jails, the courts, the tax systems, the housing industry, the healthcare system, all of this, when they control land, resources, international trade, banking, then you cannot simply reform that or try to better that and expect that you yourself will not become a target of this system. Look at someone like Julian Assange or Mumia Abu-Jamal, journalists. Look at, you know, these young kids fighting for their life, fighting for survival in the Congo, in the Sudan, in Palestine, right? You cannot vote that system away. You can't. Fascism's rise today is a clear indicator that we are on a track towards direct confrontation. Not because we want to, not because the people want to, not because any revolutionary wants to, but because the ruling class insists to continue exploiting and oppressing the masses of people around the world. What this means is that liberalism's support and platforming of fascism and right-wing voices under the impression that the allowing of alternative views is important in the development of democracy is a complete and utter hypocritical analysis of the situation, considering the fact of the matter that the fascists, the right-wings, the imperialists, the colonialists, and the capitalists have power. You do not see socialists and communists up on that stage being able to speak and give real programmatic definition to objectives and attempts to change these problems at the core. You do not see that on any television station. You do not see that on mainstream news. You do not see that talked about in the universities. You do not see that on your front page, on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, or Instagram, unless you seek it out. That is because they don't want us to look towards real revolutionary and real liberation struggles. Because they want us focusing on single issue battles. They want us focusing on elections. They want us focusing on a liberal unity, meaning that we all come together and we just fucking, you know, we just sing fucking kumbaya, as the kind of stereotype goes, right? And everything's going to be okay. That we don't deal with contradictions, that we don't confront reality, that we don't directly deal with the problems which are making it impossible for us to actually materially change the world at large, right? The relationships, the political system, the social structure, the economic production and reproduction, those institutions which are upheld and controlled both by fascists and so-called liberals are institutions of oppression, meaning that we can't join them or reform them into something which they are not. By their very nature, they are for the oppression of the masses. It is elections, a standing army, parliament, House of Representatives, and different so-called rights, which are put in place not to actually change the equation, putting the masses of people and those which are rich and powerful on the same playing field, materially, economically, politically, socially, what have you. But it is enhancing the control and the dependency which the people have on the system, on the ruling class, the control which the ruling class has over the people by these distractions or convincing the masses that these reforms are actually changing things. What we need is the change in habits of the billions. Revolution and change are constantly occurring events in embryo. If we look right now in Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, if we look in Haiti, if we look in Colombia, Ecuador, El Salvador, if we look in Chile, if we look in South Africa, if we look in Zimbabwe, if we look in the Ivory Coast, Sierra Leone, if we look in Somalia, if we look in Sudan and the Congo, if we look at the Philippines, if we look at Libya, if we look at Korea, if we look at Laos and Cambodia, if we look at Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Palestine, Yemen, Lebanon, right? We see that there are genuinely developing liberation struggles, either in embryo, in fetus form, or in full-born birth, right? And we cannot look at these movements, these struggles, and criticize them from above, right? From an armchair, from the height of the imperialists. Because we are not the imperialists. We are not the enemy. We are not the U.S. We are not them. We are not a part of them. They are our oppressors. Who we are is a part of the people, right? But we have to find what connects us to the people, and we have to bridge those connections through action, not just word. When we look at these revolutionary changes happening every single fucking day, we have to look at them as we look into the history and see that quantity over time turns into quality. So we must not repeat the wheel and keep doing the same old thing, but we must also not jump out in front of people in a way which is disconnected and disorienting, right? There are places where talking about socialism, talking about communism, talking about revolution, talking about armed struggle is a legitimate and necessary discussion, right? And there are times where those become more harmful than helpful to that period of discussion. The development of revolutionary unity is also important here, because something that we are seeing is a lot of groups coming out who are trying to build unity around single issue causes, whether it be the elections, Palestine, Cop City, abortions, healthcare, education, right? We see a lot of groups trying to build broad bridges and leaps and bounds between those bridges, between themselves and those that they're trying to work together with. The reality is very simple. If you have no principles of unity, if you have nothing which brings you together except for things which you are against, eventually you will be against one another. Whether it be in small bickering, which makes organization basically impossible, or in direct confrontation, which makes it dangerous. But the time is not now to ignore those contradictions for the sake of hopefully, you know, being able to get a ceasefire resolution or being able to get abortion on a ballot, right? But rather to develop a real revolutionary unity with those people who are aware and conscious of the problems in the same way that we are approaching the problems with the tactics and strategy which those revolutionaries before us have taught about, have succeeded with, and implementing them in a way which reflects on, resolves, and corrects the mistakes of those who have failed before us and those of us who are failing right now. Revolutionary unity also, and through, you know, the process of political education, developing participation with the masses, this is not meant to be a lecture. This is not meant to be bullshit. But it is meant to be a process of relationship building, participation, discourse, reflection, action, experiment, reflection, repeat. So today, as we look into the regional struggle against occupation and genocide, which the resistance in Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, Kuwait, Iraq, Iran, and elsewhere is committing their arms, their lives, their money, their time to, as colonialism and imperialism are attempting to expand themselves in military formations between folks like Japan, Australia, India, the United States, and the United Kingdom, attempting to encircle Russia and China, attempting to provoke and encircle Iran, right? As this is continuing forward, NATO and its friends are losing. From the 1940s to today, the so-called end of World War II, we have seen over 150 to 200 wars, battles, skirmishes, etc. Since World War II, the United States and the NATO forces have been on a consistent track towards more regular defeat and losses. This is being proved time and time and time again by the attacks coming from Yemen of ballistic missiles onto ships and military cruisers within the Red Sea, within the Indian Ocean, over 1,000 kilometers away. We're seeing this in the retaliatory attacks by Iran against the occupation forces, which killed over 7 diplomats and Revolutionary Guards leaders in Syria, within a diplomatic building, in an unprovoked attack, a war crime, a genocidal act committed by not only Israel and its forces, but by the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, and all of its friends, either by complicity or direct participation, right? It is clear in the Iraqi attacks in and against U.S. bases within the region. It is clear in attacks in Niger against the U.S. forces seizing the most expensive drone base that the United States owns and controls. It is in the developing of international relationships between peoples and nations like Nicaragua, Vietnam, Colombia, Haiti, Palestine, Yemen, Lebanon, Libya, Syria, China, and the masses of the world. It is leading to continuous revolutions, juntas, occupations, dictatorships, attempts of colonialism and imperialism to either seize back power or tighten its grip on power, all leading and getting worse, leading towards and getting worse in order to create the conditions, not only, but also the conscious memory, the organization, the practice, the habit of revolutionary struggle, which will eventually lead to an international struggle for liberation and freedom. I truly believe this. I believe we are seeing a trajectory building which will be unstoppable, which is unstoppable already. Over 190 days into the genocide, the people of Palestine are showing that their struggle is going to usher in a new tomorrow, not just in the occupied territories, not just in Gaza, not just in the West Bank, not just in the region, but throughout the world. So on this final point, we say, my friends, internationalize the struggle. Let us recognize that there is no victory which can be had here in occupied Turtle Island, which cannot be had alongside the victories of the world. Or rather, put better, there is no freedom which can be had for any one of us if there is a single person in this planet which is unfree. That much is clear through the revocation, repression, occupation, and descent into fascism by the ruling class in order to take back each and every even minuscule gain, crumb, penny tossed to the side for the masses to fight over. And so if we are going to fight, we must fight for something real, and we must fight through till our final conclusion. We must see a new world. And if we are not willing to fight for what we believe in, my friends, then we will die fighting for nothing. All power to the people.